Hi! Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Today in the studio, we have Tim Clady here for a second mentoring conversation. And you've been listening to his performance with his band called Arena. And the song is called Should I? So we ended our last session with a little bit of rain. And Tim talked about, in our conversation, he was talking about if you play the song through and let it start again, it starts with the rain and ends with the rain.
Yep.
So you feel like you're in this thunderstorm.
It sets the mood. It's rock and roll.
Exactly. So it's a wonderful song. Thanks for listening to it.
Thank you for playing it. We appreciate that. That's great.
Very cool. All right, so I am plugging, like we talked about, being entrepreneurs, we plug stuff, you know? So if you haven't heard yet, I am co-presenting with Lindsay Lewis an awesome, moving, empathic listening workshop on November 11th from 4 to 6 p.m., St. Louis Park at the Lifetime Fitness. And what we're focusing on is an opportunity for you to make meaningful connections by using the art of deep listening. We'll begin with reflective exercises so that you can go inward and really learning the ins and outs of being able to listen to people empathically without losing, the energy, where you end up kind of morphing into the other person's story. So you kind of lose yourself in the story. You don't need to do that. We'll show you how you can practice some empathic listening techniques to be a deep listener, but not, you know, lose yourself in the process or, you know, be totally exhausted when you're finished. All right. So welcome to the program, Tim. Hey, second mentoring conversation.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me again.
You're welcome. Yeah. And Mike Abea on the mic.
Hi, woo-hoo. Team.
Hello, Mike.
Yeah, the last one was so lovely. You know, got to hear a real musician talking about issues that we're facing on a daily basis.
Vision issues, a whole different catalog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So since early childhood, Tim Clady has been absorbed with making music, taking up the guitar at age 6, forming his first band at 14, and playing professionally for over half his life. Tim has created two separate but connected careers in the music industry. One as a professional musician, the other as a brand director for national franchise musical instrument retail chain Musicaround. In his 23 years with Musicaround, Tim held various positions within the brand, including senior store manager, senior field operations manager, and manager of brand operations. Because of his passion for music, not only does he create music, but also small businesses that support music communities across the United States he's involved with.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That is a great way of saying it.
Wonder where that came from. Where are you located? In St. Louis Park?
Our offices are based in Plymouth.
In Plymouth,
yeah.
Okay.
Our chain, Music Around, and here comes the marketing piece, musicaround.com. We have 34 stores open across the nation, as far west as Stockton, California, and as far east as Natick, or they call it Metro West in Boston, but as far east as Boston. So we're collectively a store that what we do is we buy and sell musical instruments.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to get too deep into the business practice, but we are official licensed secondhand dealers. It's not a pawn type of situation or anything like that. And we're part of the umbrella, which we call Windmark Corporation's five franchised retail brands.
Well, and Windmark has really kind of redefined, or not even redefined, but really brought into bringing used goods are marketable.
Yes.
And they're, you know, it's important to do that, to pass on things that you're not using anymore.
It is. You know, it's who our company is. Our five retail brands collectively last year sold well over $1 billion. That's with a B, $1 billion of used equipment in North America.
Wow.
Four of our five brands are also in Canada. My brand is looking to expand into Canada. We don't have a location there yet, but we're working on that. So we have 1,200 retail locations between our five retail brands across North America. And like I said, the $1 billion of retail is a number that our company, we still kind of look at each other and just, it's kind of staggering. The size that the company has gotten to, and the fact that we've stayed very true from day one of who we are, which is we're going to be all about used. It's our competitive difference. It's who we are. And the fact that we are 100% franchised. So all of our stores are franchised, owned, and operated. So we have the benefit of having locally owned and operated franchisees executing our brand model.
Do you train in franchisees?
Yes. Yeah. We're involved every step of the way. So, it's amazing how efficient a business can be run when you run in a franchise operation format. I have myself and my field operations manager and my marketing manager. Three of us oversee all brand operations, all marketing, all development. We do have a new store development department inside of our building that finds prospective franchisees, brings them in. But once they come in, once they agree to terms, we take over from there. And there are literally three of us who support these 34 stores. We're working on this 35th one right now. So,
And do the franchisees have like licenses for regions or what territory are they?
It's like any other franchise. You know, you purchasing a territory, a restricted territory that only they're allowed to develop a store within. And there are certain agreements and things like that go along with it. But we pre-identify territories based upon basic demographics, density. Or dot density, population, geographic as well as financial demographics, to make sure that we're putting a store into a market that has, in our case, has enough used musical instruments to supply, to feed the beast is the term that we use.
Yeah.
So you're going to find us in what we'll consider A, B, and C size markets in America. You know, nothing against D size markets, you know, smaller, you know, 20, 30, 40,000, you know, population cities, there just isn't enough
volume.
Product. Yeah, yeah. You know, we are very much the musical instrument industry. I should say the musical instrument retail industry is a relatively small industry. Collectively, we do about $8 billion a year, and that's all musical instrument resale, or I shouldn't say resale, but retail.
Yeah.
That's basically what Walmart does in what, 2 weeks? So it gives you an idea of the scope of the industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have very, very tight demographics that we follow before we're going to award a store and open in a territory. But a franchisee comes in and they sign an exclusive agreement with us to execute our business model, to use our trademark, to use our e-commerce environment. They are a Music Around franchise for the length of that term. It's a 10-year term.
10-year term.
So no different than someone who would be purchasing into a McDonald's. They do things the McDonald's way. The business says McDonald's on the outside of the building, no different than us. We supply them an entire business model, a marketing scheme, branded, trademarked logos, everything they need.
So if someone wants to buy in, what's the range of what they need to come up with for cash?
Yeah, the capitalization was on the low end is about $285,000. On the high end, it's about $350,000. But that's all in, which includes a majority of that, quite honestly, is the inventory, your opening inventory.
And what's the turnaround for that for the franchisee? How quickly can they earn that money back?
Okay, rule number one at Windmark, we don't make any earnings claims.
Of course. But if you looked at like some of your average
We like to see stores. Our businesses cash flowing by the end of their first fiscal year.
Really?
Yeah. That's the plan. We've had some that have done that much earlier, and we've had some that have done that in a little bit longer period of time than that.
Meaning
18 months, things like that. We set what we consider to be very, very conservative fiscal goals for those, or financial goals for those companies in their early days. In a sense, we try to talk people out of doing this to make sure they're the right people to do this and that they don't have unrealistic demands of a young business. And regardless of what business you're in, one of the things that I see, in my role with our company, I also do all of the accounting, bookkeeping, and financial management training for all five of our franchises.
Oh, you do?
Because everyone wants a musician, watching their financial back. So I don't know if there's going to be images of me or people go online and see me and imagine me, someone who looks like me, walking into a room where on the screen, and I do this every month, we have two different separate weeks of training for our incoming franchisees. In week one, I talk about the accounting and bookkeeping process and where the information is going to come from and how to compile it and put in it. I have a background in accounting because most musicians do. Sarcasm horn. I know exactly.
But music develops that kind of the brain. You can read notes, read finances.
You know what? Math is a very important part of the music process. Math is music. Math is tempo. How many beats per minute? Things like that. But numbers and all that. I'm kind of a numbers geek in a way or nerd, whatever word you want to use. I like crunching and analyzing data and asking the question of if I do X, what will the outcome be? What will Y be?
Yeah.
And then understand why that is. But in any case, I walk in these rooms and people are looking, these brand new franchisees are like, what's this guy doing in here? And then I get into the session and all of a sudden their eyes open up and they're like, okay, well, he doesn't necessarily look like he knows what he's talking about, but he knows what he's talking about. And my explanation about 20 minutes into my presentations is always I like to throw curveballs at people.
And it works.
That's one of the fun things in life is doing the unexpected and delivering the unexpected.
So in your experience, what have you noticed? Like, how are franchisees getting funding?
Oh, funding, I mean,
like, are they getting business loans?
Yes, they are. Windmark has a great reputation, and we've been doing this for a very long time. Our process of financially pre-approving a franchisee really sets them up to not fail, if you will. We're going to bring people in who have the net worth to secure the financing that they need.
Sure.
One of the challenges we have in music around is musicians and money. Let's just be honest. There's not a lot of them that can do it.
Well,
we have tons and tons of interest, and we probably have a lot of people out there that would run great stores. They just don't have the net worth or the ability to find a partner, to help them capitalize.
Yeah.
But we continue to look and find those right people. I think one of the most important things that we've discovered, and this is a really, really big piece of who Windmark is we are dedicated to finding the right people and only the right people. So, every business has quotas. Everyone's like, hey, we want to develop 70 stores or 80 stores this year. If we only wind up developing 50, that's okay, because we know that we chose the right 50 people to do business with.
Yeah.
And that we're not opening 60 to say, 80% of it's going to work out. Those other 10, we're just padding numbers. That's not the way Windmark does business. And that's instilled from our very top executive management all the way down through my level of management and all the way down into all of our field operations people, everyone who works in the company. Windmark has, if you look at our logo, it's we find and we create and we support small business. That's who we are.
Yeah, that's what you do.
And we don't get the reputation nor the results that we've had by frivolously awarding franchise locations just for numbers reason. That's a short-term concept. We are in this long-term. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. We reuse, recycle, rock.
I love that tag. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Your little tagline.
Where did that come from? Oh gosh. About 10 years ago, I took over the brand as the director. I'm not a president. That's not the title that we use, but I'm responsible for that silo, which is Music Around. And there's four other peers inside our company who are responsible for their brand as well as directors. I took over the brand in 2006, working my way up. I literally started actually as a commissioned salesperson in our very first store. Kind of worked my way up through it and took over in 2006. And I was at the time, the metrics, how our business was focused is I don't really feel as though we were embracing the identity of used like we should have been. So when I ran in the early days, we had corporately held stores and we had franchise locations.
Yeah.
And I was running the corporate stores and it was a big deal for us to be all about used. That's who we are. But we weren't really executing that on the franchise side. So when I took over the brand in 2006, I said, you know, we are going to be used or we're going to be nothing. Rule number one, you have to know who you are.
Yeah.
You got to know what your competitive difference is. What do you bring to the marketplace that will rise above the noise?
Mm-hmm.
That people will go, oh, I relate your brand to X. And we decided at that time we were going to be used. So our average store when I took over in 2006 was about 55% used. Our average store was doing about $600,000 a year. And we had about 40 locations. Now we're at 34 locations. Our average store is doing just shy of $1 million a year, and we're 80% used. And that's who we are. And a lot of it starts with an idea. The idea was reuse, recycle, rock.
Yeah.
And honestly, it came to me. It's one of those, you tripped into a river of gold thinks you're a genius. I'm going to give credit to Paul Stanley about that one because he said that once and I'm just stealing taglines.
From Kiss.
Yes. When we go, rule number one of business, it always comes back to Kiss. Gene Simmons has taught more people more business lessons than anyone else. But
did you ever see his reality show?
Oh, goodness.
The Family Jewels.
Okay. So I can side note this one. I'm going to sidetrack and I'm known to do this.
Go for it.
So I watched a show. If you're a Kiss fan, you got to love everything about Gene Simmons.
Oh my gosh. I was enthralled the show when his daughter, they went skiing and his daughter was dating she was meeting some guy there. Her boyfriend, apparently, that he hadn't met yet.
Yeah.
And so the whole show, you know, he's trying to get up on the hill.
Yes.
On top of the mountain to ski down. He's never skied. Yes. So they got him all outfitted. And he ends up in the chair lift with the guy, which he didn't know, that she's dating.
Oh.
It is so hilarious. And then, so they have this great conversation, kind of a cool connection. And then he reached the top and I don't know exactly what happened. I just remember that he ran into like a tree. They had to stop taping. I'm like, he is so like naturally just funny.
He is. He's got a great sense of humor about him. Anyone in the music industry, they might not like his band. They might not like his music, but they have to respect what he has done.
Band
that's basically four chords and songs about your nether regions. Let's just be honest. And everything they made it, everything about them is larger than life. So one of the first lessons I learned in listening and reading books about Gene is you got to be the part before you are the part. So he talks about about their very first concert they ever played at and being a Kiss fan and now I'm blanking on it, but the very first show Kiss ever played was some little tiny bar way out in Long Island. Wasn't even in Manhattan, right? Way out in Long Island. And they decided, there might have been, according to them, four or five people there, but they rented a limo. And they showed up in this big stretch limo, and this would have been probably like 1972, 1973.
Okay.
They show up in this big stretch limo and walk out like they're rock stars. And they walk in this club and they play their show in front of three people. And from day one, they were bigger rock stars than they ever were. So in their minds, it's like I said, it's you got to be the part before you are the part.
Yeah.
And having that identity and so many things about Gene, about his show. You know, and I
even the discussion about whether or not they should perform it with makeup on anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and they made the right business decisions for them. A very good friend of mine, a local guy who's done a lot of video work for us as well as doing all of our photography, is actually the host of a really, really popular Kiss podcast that I listen to every week. And these guys, it's called Three Sides of the Coin. If there's any KISS fans out there,
oh
go
gosh.
Listen to that one.
Yeah.
I'm not trying
Doug,
to cross
Doug Dewar,
here.
If you're listening.
Yeah, don't leave this one. Just when you're done. Go, but
so what's it called again?
Three Sides of the Coin.
Okay.
And if you are a KISS fan at all, you need to listen to these people talk because they know stuff about KISS that I couldn't even imagine. But I digress about KISS. KISS's business lessons in life, and they all kind of tie back. And like I said—
Well, branding, I mean,
yes. There's nobody better at it.
Yeah.
There never has been. I would argue that Nike isn't as good at branding as KISS has been, you know?
Yeah.
Well, look at a Nike catalog. I'll bet there's more stuff that says KISS on it that says Nike than it says Nike on it. You know, and Gene's been a role model for the industry, and Gene's profound and understands the one big concept, which is there is no such thing as bad press. If they're talking about you, they're talking about you. Now, we don't necessarily take the negative side of that and play into it. At Music Around, we're very, very concerned with our brand's reputation. So the idea, like I'll dial back to, we'll go full circle back to the reuse and recycle rock. I literally was sitting at my desk one day and there was a recycling flyer sitting on my desk. And I looked at it when, you know, was it recycle, reuse, you know, whatever the phrase is, I can't even remember.
Yeah.
But I looked at it and our marketing manager at the time, who's no longer with us, but she walked in my office and I go, what do you think of this? Reuse, recycle, rock. And it was one of those light bulb moments.
It
completely
it just came
describes
together.
Who this company is going to be. So the brand, the concept actually evolved really kind of before the results did.
Yeah.
The reuse, recycle, rock was put there as a message, not just to the customer, but to our franchisees. This is who we are, and this is how we're going to be.
So this is be the part before you
yes,
are the part.
That's exactly yeah. it. It's define who you're going to be, and then find your path to executing that. You know,
yeah,
whatever
yeah,
it is.
Beautiful.
In life.
Yeah, that's such
that's
good
such
advice.
Powerful mantra.
Okay. Is he showing some humbleness over there? I'm looking.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to say it again. I fell into a river of gold and people might have called me a genius. I tripped down a hill and wound up in a river full of gold. Yeah, but again, you know, there's so many influences in this world that you can pick things out, whether it's sports or whether it's music or whether it's reading a novel or whatever. I always challenged myself that whatever I got involved with, I was going to learn something and take something out of it. And that's kind of one of the things that I try to share with the people that work. I never like using the word work for me because they don't work for me. We work collectively together.
Yeah.
But you know,
work side by side.
Yeah. Everything you do in life, try to pull something out of it that lifts you, that makes you better, that you add to your file cabinet.
Yeah.
That's something I can, an experience I can draw back on. And maybe I have like a really, really, really good memory. I don't know. I've been told that I do. But I just tend to remember these moments. Like I was talking about in the previous session where we talked about being 8 years old and seeing KISS on the Paul Lind Halloween special. And it was life-changing. And I remember it like it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Or going to see KISS for the first time in concert or, you know, whatever it was and just try to take something that from that experience that I can pull into my everyday life, learn from those who have been there before you.
Yeah.
That is, I think, one of the best life lessons you can have.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just mentioned here a guy who's actually responsible with for your photography and videography stuff. How much importance do you give to music videos? Are you into that at all?
Yeah, you know, we're actually in the process of—
Such a good question.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. I mean, the visual part of music is massive, just because of the environment that we're in. Everyone wants to see something. I mean, you dial it back 30, 40, 50 years ago, there were 3 televisions on TV. And where did you see a music video? You really didn't.
But 3 television stations, right?
Yeah, bands were still making videos. But where did you see them? Well, now the environment we're in now, everything is visual. You know, it's crazy. So the importance of your visual look and how you tie it to the music, it's all part of the package. It's all part of here's who we are and here's how we're going to look and here's how we're going to sound. And like I said, you got to have that part of it down. I'm not claiming that we do. We are who we are. Mm-hmm. We look the way we look. Yeah. We don't
You know what you know.
Yeah, yeah. We thank you. A wise man once said that. It was my
dad. Very good students here.
It was my dad, actually.
Something stuck.
Yeah, you know, and some things are not, they don't require hours of planning. Sometimes it is, this is who I feel comfortable being, or as our band, this is how we feel comfortable, this is who we are. We don't want to position ourselves to be something that we're not. Being true to who you are, and then, you know, the analysis does kind of fall into place. So the reuse, recycle, rock concept, I tie back to music around. When we sat and looked at that, all of a sudden we had this tagline, and it even got down to the point where we decided, what is that font that we're going to use to put all this thing into print? What's that going to look like? And we went through all these different fonts and we came across one, and it's some complicated name, but it basically looks like splattered paint where it's dripping down. And we went, that's really cool. That kind of represents to me someone who's really serious about reuse and recycle, but the rock part of it is who we are, which is, we're having fun. And then the font itself shows that it's edgy, it's, you know, unique, it's whatever. It's not just some static, you know, Helvetica bold, boom, whatever.
Right.
That entire package, not just the words themselves, but how they're laid out, the visual as well as the message, it all kind of creates this thing.
So getting into the details of the of your look, go ahead.
Yeah,
you were going to say something else.
Well, I was just going to say is we kind of created this. It's almost like this revelation of reuse, recycle, rock went, this is really the best thing for us to help us decide who, this is who we're going to be. This is, it's embodied in this.
So you can teach from it. You can connect your vision to it. And everybody, and you can focus on different elements of it and build it out.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think there's a lot of companies who will switch up their taglines every 3 or 4 years to keep it fresh. Mm-hmm. We've been using reuse, recycle, rock forever, and we will probably continue using it forever.
It makes sense.
Not because we're trying to break marketing rules, but because it will always embody who this company is and what
it's
we believe in.
It's part of your identity.
Yeah. And it's gotten so much positive feedback. So many people now come and say, we see that and it is totally you. And I think that's great. That was the mission.
Yeah.
But we decided on that. That kind of helped us frame who, when we were 55% used, we needed a rallying cry. How do we get to be where we are today? First, we got to envision who we are. And then you have to envision how you're going to get there. And that's arguably a great thing about franchising is we deliver this entire model. You want to be a small business owner that sells guitars. We have the entire package for you to get here. Just follow and execute what we tell you to do. Follow our brand. And you can, this sounds really marketing, you can reuse, recycle, rock too. No, but I don't mean it to
but
be
it's
that
all,
way.
But it's also the type of person that you want doesn't want to develop their own brand and work all those other pieces out. I mean, what they want to take risks on is really kind of developing the brand further. So they want to improve, kind of try out a proven model. Without taking all the financial risks that you would need to run a business.
Correct.
I mean, a startup.
I'm extremely biased. I know that. But franchising is the smartest decision any small business owner can make. Because, you know, I'm not saying that that's a guarantee. And I'm also not saying that there's not bad franchises out there. But as a whole, going it alone and trying to create a unique identity in whatever marketplace you're in, and it's so hard. There's I use the word noise, and that's kind of a musician thing, but there's so much noise out there. Try to be an independent business. Well, you're providing a service or you're selling something or you're buying something or, you know, I respect anyone who is willing to go out there and like I said, fly it up the flagpole.
Yeah.
But you know what? A franchise helps you fly that flag. That flag might be a slightly different color than what you thought it was going to be, but you're still flying your flag because you own it. A franchise is just helping you achieve that level of success so much quicker.
Well, and it's kind of nice to have a circle of people that are helping you and invested in your success.
if they succeed, we succeed.
Right.
And that's how
everybody
that's
gets
our financial
paid.
That's our financial relationship as well with our franchisees. Is the better they do, the better we do. And that's the
sure.
way it should be. And that's what keeps us true to I circle back to us talking about making the right decisions and opening businesses with the right people.
Yeah.
It's not just about do you have the money and do you, you know, have interest in this? It's above and beyond that. Can you execute the brand? Can you deliver the level of service that we expect? Can you be an I'm looking at the flyer here, you know,
empathic listener.
Yeah, you know again, in retail, I was telling my son this, my oldest son, his summer job was selling golf clubs for a large sporting goods firm, and we just went to visit him on parents weekend at his university, and we were talking about how cool retail is not problem solving, it's not that, but people come to you with a specific need and your job is to fill that need with the best possible solution for them.
Yeah.
How cool is that? And you know, you get to do it again and again and again. But it's not repetitive because every person coming to your store has a different situation. You know, in our world, I'm a brand new guitar player, or I'm an experienced guitar player, or I'm a drummer, or I need to buy a cymbal or whatever it is. And it's so much fun to be able to deal with people who have a passion about that same product that you live and breathe with,
yeah.
but every single customer has a different need that you can help fill. I mean, that to me is one of the coolest things in the world I ever did.
Yeah.
I joke with some of my friends that, you know, you're out and about, and I'm not kidding, this is just a couple of weeks ago, we were playing a show and a guy comes up to me and he says, dude, because that's kind of how we approach each other. Dude, spelled D-O-O-D, dude, you sold me a guitar 26 years ago. And I'm like, what guitar was that? And he described the guitar and I remember the guitar like it was yesterday. It was a red Kramer Beretta, blah, 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 blah. And anyway, I remember that guitar. I remember the transaction. I didn't really remember him, but I remembered the guitar. I remember selling it. I remember the whole
deal. The true musician.
Yeah, I mean, it's gear first. But it was so cool. It was so cool that someone remembered that. And like, dude, you know, it was really neat. So
D-O-O-D.
Yeah, so like, you know, kind of going, yeah. Well, that's a whole other story. The million reasons or a million meanings to the word dude. But we have an awful lot of fun. At the end of the day, one of the things I like to share with my franchisees is everyone, every business goes through troubles.
Yeah.
And everyone goes through highs and lows in their personal life, or their business life. And you have a good month, you have a bad month, you have a good quarter, you have a bad quarter. Something happened, something broken, you know, I just signed this lease, we're 5 months into it, and the warranty on my HVAC expired, and now all of a sudden the HVAC went out, and I have a $7,000 air conditioner I need to replace. And that's a traumatic situation, especially for cash flow. But you step back and say, what do we do for a living? We buy and we sell guitars. We help people create music. If you can't enjoy doing that, I just kind of give me the keys and go home, and we'll find someone who can, because that's how you have to look at life. So if you own a sandwich shop, you're feeding people who need your services, and if you take that approach with it, and every customer comes in your door, and that you're saying, I'm not just giving them something, I'm feeding them, I'm giving them nourishment so they can go out and contribute to life, and it's all part of this big ecosystem.
Yeah.
We buy and sell musical instruments because people either have monetary needs, they need cash,
yeah,
or they need to replace whatever they're selling to us, they're replacing it with something else so they can create music and make you happy, and that inspires you to go do something, and then that inspires you, you know, I'm not trying to get too fluffy here, but it's that big ecosystem that is, it is. Everything
yeah.
is intertwined, and we
yeah.
just happen to do it on the music side, which is really cool.
Yeah. And, okay, there's one last question that
Fire
I have
away.
Before we close out. and this has to do with the growth of podcasts. So, because I've seen, like, with music, the whole industry has opened up when people can release their own music through their own social media and develop their own YouTube and visual aspect of it. Podcasting also has opened up the entire field so people can do it in many different forms in all different types of industries. And you can get it on the air in so many easy formats mm-hmm. to do it. Why do you think, and so I know it's part of the reason is that the, because the entry to get into the marketplace and develop your own show is much lower than it used to be. But with the growing market of YouTube and people wanting more and more videos, you know, I have people saying, well, why don't you, you know, do your show on video?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, because I really like, you know, focusing on the listening. But I'm wondering, you know, is that a missed market?
Well, I personally listen to a handful of podcasts. And I listen to them sync to my phone or sync from my phone to my car on my really long commute home, because we all know that during the summer in Minneapolis, it's construction season. So my wonderful commute, I love the podcast concept because I'm not trying to be disparaging about radio, but nobody cares about the radio anymore. And that's coming more from a music standpoint. Really, nobody's listening to the radio anymore. And you can see that in advertising results and things like that. So I listen to podcasts, and some of the podcasts I listen to have a video aspect to it. I find that in my life, I really don't have the time to be able to sit down and watch the video as well. So I'm constantly multitasking. It's part of being the extremely type A person, borderline obsessive compulsive person that I am. I use that time when I'm driving home to at least listen to it.
Yeah.
I would say my advice to you would be, if listen to your customer, listen to your fan or your client or whatever.
Yeah.
We've grown, my brand Music Around has grown so much because we've just stopped and checked. And it's not an ego thing. We just checked what we thought we knew. You know what you know?
Yeah.
You gauge what you know, but then you stop and say, okay, what I know, is that fulfilling what my customer, my fan, my whatever wants?
Yeah.
And you take what they say. And if you have a large contingent of people, if you're getting that kind of feedback, why not do it video? You know, the technology is there. It can be done pretty easily. You know, you can record it. Then you can take the audio track and you can rip it and you can continue to do the audio only, but put yourself on YouTube. And putting yourself in positions like that and making sure that your keywords are tagged and things like that, you can really help find new listeners, because people are constantly looking for information.
Yeah.
And I think the onset of podcasts came, I think we're kind of a spawn of the digital book. People spending all this time in their cars, listening
when you're
to something
traveling,
because they don't want to listen to whatever is blaring through the. They want to listen to what they want to listen to,
and whenever they want to listen,
whenever they want to listen to it. I found the older I get, when I was 25, I'd listen to music all day long, from the moment I woke up until the moment I went to bed, and I still listen to a lot of music. But I find on my drive home, I like hearing people talk about things. I also found that listening to podcasts on those late night drive homes after shows.
Yeah, right.
I get more engaged in all honesty, it helps me drive safer because I'm more focused. I'm more awake, honestly.
Sure.
So I have certain podcasts that I'll listen to on late night drive homes because they're funny or they're engaging and whatever, those kind of things. But like I said, one of the big lessons we learned at Music Around is ask your customers where they are.
Yeah.
And you'll go find them. It was a revelation to us. I won't expand on this too much, but one of our stores was having some challenges with the return on investment in their marketing dollars, where they were spending marketing.
Sure.
And I use the term traditional marketing, which would be TV, radio, print, things like that. Their marketing budget was about 80% traditional versus 20% digital. And this goes back about 4 or 5 years. And they were really struggling getting the message through. They weren't getting their KPIs, their key performance indicators, were not improving where they thought the message was being spent, or it was being sent and the spend. So they decided, we worked with them and they said, let's do an exit survey. Yeah. So just went on a SurveyMonkey and created like a 6-question questionnaire that they did exit survey from customers on. And one of the questions was, you know, what radio stations do you listen to? What TV shows do you watch? How old are you? What gender? You know, it's a couple basic, just demographic information. And what we found was shocking. If you're under 35 years old, you don't watch TV and you don't listen to the radio. And our demographic is, our core demographic is, we'll call it the 18 to 35 male. So we were spending all this money on TV and radio where our demographic wasn't.
Yeah.
And the moment we shifted that 80% traditional to 80% digital, it was immediate. It was the next day. people were showing up going, I don't know who you are, but I have a guitar to sell. It was another light bulb moment. So we wouldn't have figured that out if we wouldn't have taken the time to stop and listen to our customer. And our customer told us, this is who we are and this is where we are. So if you get that feedback, if you have people wanting a visual, go for it.
Okay.
Why not?
Good advice.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, great. We've learned a ton about branding. We've learned a ton about you and your love of KISS and your beginnings in branding from there. Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Well,
okay.
Know, if you're going to go big, you got to go big or go home, right? Yeah,
that's right. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Mike, for being on the mic. And
thank
for
you,
your
Nancy.
Yeah, photography.
I learned some stuff here. He's such a good talker, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, he's got a lot of important things to say.
Yeah.
And lastly, your Vicious Cycle song.
Vicious Circle. Yeah.
Oh,
Vicious
I'm sorry.
Circle.
Vicious
okay.
Circle.
Vicious
yes,
Circle.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah.
We're going to take us out
fantastic.
With that song.
Love that song.
Tell us a little bit about it.
All right, it's a little bit of a seedier song. It's a story about a drug dealer and
yeah.
how his world kind of comes to a collapse where he kind of thinks he's King Blank.
Yeah.
And he comes to realize that the vicious circle you as kind of a life lesson is the people that you meet on your way up the ladder are people you're going to meet on the way down the ladder. So you'd probably better be pretty good to them or it's going to be an ugly retreat. So that's kind of what that song
oh, wow.
is really about. It's talking about
See,
a drug dealer,
a little,
unfortunately.
That's
I know.
That's a little deeper though.
It is, but it's
I think
the
your
vicious...
songs are deeper than you are playing them off
yeah,
to be.
It's, you know,
did you and Ted write this?
That was a song that the lyrics and the riff of the music was something I brought in. Ted had written the lyrics. And then typically what happens with Linda, our singers, is she's the one who's responsible for the melody. She's really responsible for singing the song. So the delivery has to be from her. And I don't want to leave out Billy either. Billy Wesp is our drummer. You know, Billy is the backbone of everything that we do. I didn't get a chance to mention him.
I'll put him in.
We collectively write these songs together. Everyone's responsible for their piece. So the idea that the lyrics of this song were brought by Ted, and Ted's got a really good vision of just ways of saying things, and then Linda and I will take all of these words and we kind of pare them down into making the right size for the song. So, but that's what this song is about. It's about a drug dealer who's come to realize that his time is up and the song is over and that's all he's got to say.
So we'll end it with that. And remember, everybody, reuse, recycle, and now you can rock.
Now you can rock.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Mike.
Life like someone else's treasure. You wallow in make-believe things. You don't see the peasants as you push it to the limit till everybody knows your name. You're sheltered from the street in a long black mansion on wheels. Nameless faces are the people that you cheat on your way to another deal. Abundance in the house of a criminally sane. You are wall, vault your ceiling in your fortress of a war hall vein. You're too blind to see that they've been watching you. Your future lies in balance and your time is nearly due. Who's gonna want you now that you got nothing? Who's gonna need you now?